you are not a there we go. If you are not a presenter or moderator, please go ahead and mute yourself. We will have time for questions towards the end. Good evening. Welcome to the third in a series of forum organized by the Arlington Civic Federation's Task Force in Governance and Election Reform. My name is Chris Wimbush, and I am Tiger's chair. Tiger was recruited by the Civic Federation in response to legislation signed into law by the governor, which will enable Arlington, if it so chooses, to use ranked choice voting and electing our county board. The Civic Federation decided in initiating Tiger that it was proper to conduct a wider examination of Arlington's form of governance and electoral system.
And rewarding those who comply and penalizing those who don't, and also by arousing the Republican.
As a reminder, please do mute when you come on to the call. The task force will examine and potentially make recommendations on reforms which might include structural reform through district representation and or multi-member synchronous elections, the size and pay of our county board and or our school board, ranked choice voting for county board and school board general elections, the future role of primaries and caucuses, options for alternative electoral mechanisms besides first past the post and ranked choice voting, and term limits. In this series of discussions, we will present a variety of viewpoints regarding our governance and electoral options. But to be clear, at this time, Tiger is in listening mode and has not yet formulated any recommendations on the issues before us. And we have members who come to this work with a wide range of views. We do expect that the task force will evaluate the 6 points mentioned in the resolution and and make a statement or report to the broader community on our findings. This evening, I'm excited for a fantastic round table on Arlington government, and I'm going to turn things over to John and Tanya to get us started. Thank you all for joining us this evening.
Great. Thanks a lot, Chris Wimbush, our great leader over these last several months. We really appreciate your ongoing leadership in this regard. I also am looking in the participants room, and I'm cheered to note that we have several distinguished guests among us. You know, some people who may show up incognito and all we have is a phone number, but I do want to call attention to the fact that also joining us this evening, at least for the moment, our former county manager, Barbara Dinellen, the successor to Mr. Carley, and current county board member Katie Crystal, and former county board member Mary Hines. We really appreciate your being with us this evening. Don't hesitate to ask questions, put in a comment to the chat, Katie and Mary and Barbara. So tonight we're going to take it down to the local level. As some of you who have been on the previous public fora conducted over the last month or so, we had a session on local government in Fort Worth, Texas, and another one looking at the scene in Portland, Oregon. We're trying to get a broad outreach in terms of how other folks do it compared to how we do it. For better or for worse, or just for thinking about. So tonight we're drilling down to the local level, and we're very excited to have Ron Carley, former county manager, as I indicated, 2001 to 2009. He was chief. Sorry for that feedback, folks. He was after being county manager in 2009, he went over to become chief operating officer of the International City County Management Association from 2009 to 2013. He served for 3 or 4 years in Charlotte as city manager, and he's currently assistant professor of public administration at Old Dominion University, ODU, down in Tidewater. Also tonight, and going first actually in the two panel lineup, is the Honorable Kristen Amundson of neighboring Fairfax County. Chris has over 3 decades as an education policy expert and elected office. And we're particularly excited to have her expertise, not just because she served as a Fairfax County School Board member for a number of years, but that she took that to the state legislature and served as a member of the House of Delegates in the General Assembly, and finally as CEO of the National Association of State Boards of Education. She's now an educational consultant and author. Have we seen the bio screens from either of our panelists yet, or are we gonna run those when each of them expound?
I think we're gonna post them while each of them introduce
Okay. Yeah. Okay, Chris Amundson, take it away for 5 minutes and then she'll be followed by Ron. Feel free to expand on that introduction in either case, and just give us your broad perspective on local government and the value of local government. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, John, and thanks, Tanya, and thanks to all of you for joining. I am wearing my vote necklace here because let's all remember that one of the things about Virginia is that every time we turn around, we get to have another election, and there's one tomorrow. So if you are a Democrat and have not yet voted in the primary, you can do that tomorrow. So just a little reminder. I am here to talk, and I have a lot of experience with school boards. So what I'm going to do in this first 5 minutes is just lay out why I think school boards are important and why I particularly think elected school boards are important. We will get into a whole bunch of other things as we go into the questions, but I could either, you know, talk really fast and not give you much, or I could kind of break it into chunks. So this is why I think school boards are important and why I think elected boards are particularly beneficial, because I was a member of both. So school boards in the United States came about almost as soon as schools happened. We know that as early as the 1600s, there were school committees. Now, largely those school committees were in charge of doing things like making sure there was enough wood for the stove so that students and the teacher didn't freeze to death, and that the teacher had a place for room and board. They were not really largely policy boards, but their responsibilities expanded. And the original practice was sort of one school, one board, which meant that by the early 1900s in Philadelphia alone, there were 43 elected school boards just in the city of Philadelphia. Obviously, that was a little too many. And so one of the first big school board reforms came about right after World War II, when there was a real intentional combining and consolidating of school boards. And so we're down now to about less than 17,000 school boards across the country. In Virginia, of course, as we know, we have a county system, and then some cities also have their own school board. Fairfax City has a school board, but Fairfax County runs their schools. So that's why whenever you ask anybody how many school divisions there are in Virginia, they kind of go, well, you know, depends on how you count Fairfax City. But there are 98 counties anyway, I can tell you that. And the Constitution of Virginia is very clear that the supervision of schools in each school division shall be vested in a school board to be composed of members selected in the manner for the term, possessing the qualifications, and to the number provided by law. That's it. That's all the Constitution says. And so it's fairly open. But the key there is to note that in Virginia, they are school divisions, not school boards. In Virginia, school systems are a part of the Constitution. And so local school boards have more power in Virginia than they do in many places across the country, because they are enabled by the Constitution of Virginia. So what do they do? And what is it that school boards, we expect school boards to do now? I think most important, they represent the values of the community. And there is really no better example of that than Arlen. I would remind you, some of you might be my age and might even remember this, but the rest of you should know it. And that is that Arlington, right after the war, was largely a rural community with crappy schools. And so the move to strengthen county government in Arlington was very much also tied up with a desire to make the schools stronger. And somehow Arlington managed to slide through the General Assembly of Virginia a provision that they would elect their school board member, which of course, when the Brown versus Board of Education decision came down from the Supreme Court of the United States, became a real issue. The Arlington, because we all know that the Byrd machine, and I always say the Byrd machine is just Jim Crow, except there were those flat Virginia vowels instead of the drawling Southern vowels and a lot more seersucker. But other than that, the Byrd machine was just a Jim Crow organization. And they decreed that schools should close, massive resistance, rather than integrate. But the school board in Arlington, which was led by Elizabeth Campbell, who in her spare time founded WETA TV, said, you know what? We actually just faced our voters and we kind of know what they want, and they don't want us to shut our schools. So we're just going to integrate. And then they went on to do what I imagine is something very similar to what you are doing the Arlington way. I am sure they were setting up committees and holding public hearings and doing all sorts of things. And so the Virginia General Assembly reacted in the only way they could, which was to say, well, then we just won't let you be elected, and we won't let any school board in the Commonwealth of Virginia be elected. And that was the state of play for 40 years until the mid-1990s. In the middle 1990s, we passed a constitutional amendment, the voters did, that put elected school boards back first on the ballot for the voters. And then I had been appointed in 1991, but in 1995, I ran for the first time as an elected official. So I saw both sides of the elected appointed division. And in general, I am a big fan of elected school boards because, among other things, it lets you say to, you know, people from other levels of government, you know, the same voters that had the great good sense to elect you also elected me. And I think I know what they want, and this is what it is. So I think I always compared it to being moved to sitting at the grown-ups table. Now, I will say there were people, very good people, who served on school boards before they were elected, who just were not interested in the nonsense involved in running for elections. And those of you who knew Joanne Field, who was the chairman of the Fairfax board for a while, the chairman of our budget committee, and like the world's smartest person about budgets. And she was just like, yeah, I'm not doing that foolishness. And we lost her. She would not run. So, I mean, I'm not saying that an elected board versus an appointed board is perfect, but it is, I think, the best way to do what the Arlington School Board was doing back in the 1950s, and that is to represent the values of the community. So I'm going to stop here now, and then I imagine we will get into lots of other specific conversations about a lot of other interesting issues. And again, thanks for being with us.
John, you're on mute.
Take it away, Ron. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back in Arlington, even if it is just virtual. Look forward to being back and visiting with you in the near future. I have enjoyed reflecting on Arlington these last few days, especially as we're coming up on, if you can believe it, the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And that brings back totally a flood of memories. the question that you asked was how important is local government? And local governments are really fundamental to the United States system of government. Local governments operate with a very high level of independence, with each one literally unique. When I teach local government, I tell my students at the beginning of the semester, the answer to every question I ask will be, it depends, because literally no two local governments are the same. My mission today is to recruit people to local government and to support people who are working locally, whether in government or in the community. The last time I had a structural discussion about Arlington's government was about 10 years ago. Interesting, I have my commemorative fire helmet on my desk. It was the fire union that really upset with me and wanted the county board to fire me. They didn't, so they lodged a campaign to change the form of government through a voter referendum. It didn't go real well for them, and I had an opportunity to do a couple of presentations back then. Then, as now, what I would say as you're looking at issues of structure is to really reflect upon what problem are you really trying to solve? And what is the root cause of that problem? There's a technique called the five whys. Don't accept the first answer. Drill down five times to try to really understand what the root cause is and what you're trying to achieve. We often default to structural change just to do something. And more often than not, I find that organizational issues are not structural. They are most often issues of leadership. Different structures do not ensure better leadership, or said differently, the right people can make any structure work. I have worked in three different governments, Birmingham, Alabama, Arlington, of course, for my longest tenure. I was in Arlington 6 months shy of 30 years, including the last 9 years as manager. And I worked in Charlotte, North Carolina. At ICMA, as was noted, I've worked with governments across the United States and across the world. In my consulting work today, I work with local governments all across the country. I'm doing work with seven villages up in New York right now. Just finished some work with Fredericksburg and with a town down in North Carolina. And I've done some consulting on local government in Japan. Tonight, I will try to give you the pros and cons of the different structural variables that you have under consideration. My understanding, as was articulated earlier, you're at the information gathering stage, which I would expect from Arlington Civic Federation, no less. And at the end of the period, to repeat, I strongly encourage you to reflect deeply on what you want to achieve and why, and ensure that you avoid any unintended consequences. Because Arlington is a highly respected, stable, and progressive community. It has consistently performed at a very high level with AAA bond ratings going back to when ratings almost began. And all of that's contributed to Arlington's success, including out beating the best of the best on the East Coast for Amazon. So it's a strong community. It doesn't mean that changes can't be made, and I can argue on both sides of just about every element. In the end, though, what do we really want to achieve, and will the change envisioned achieve that objective? Thank you. And again, I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
And I'm just going to chime in here. We decided we were going to try to create a little back and forth between the two of us. And I would say this. Only in Arlington could you get a bunch of people all riled up to come to public meetings to defend the county manager's form of government. And only in Fairfax could you be asked as a board member to sit through, as I was, a public hearing where 85 people showed up to talk about the third grade spelling textbook that we were about to adopt. So I would not suggest that it is like this everywhere, but Arlington, Alexandria are really special places, and the citizens here are pretty friggin' amazing.
Well, just to underscore that, Chris, you know, I sat through, you know, probably 20 budget public hearings when I was in Arlington, and oftentimes would have 100 people or sometimes more, and sometimes would have to go two nights. I had my first budget hearing down in Charlotte when I became city manager there, and there are like 10 people there. And I'm like, well, where?
Yeah. Did they not get the memo?
Yeah. And they just, you know, that level of engagement just doesn't exist in a lot of communities. Yeah.
Well, we do want to have this as interactive as possible, not just among our panelists and moderators, co-moderating with me tonight as former school board member Tanya Talento, who was also an architect of this evening's presentations. But we also would hope to have a dialogue among those attending virtually elsewhere in the community and through the chat. So before I yield the floor to Tanya, in terms of the first two variables, let me just throw out a couple of statistics here, because the first thing we're going to be talking about is the number of county board members, and then a segue to how we elect the board members. Should it be exclusively at large as they are now? Should it be exclusively by district, as frankly most counties in Arlington are? Or should it be a combination or permutation like Fairfax, where you at least have a chair elected by district, or rather by at large, and then everybody else by district? So to be clear, the current board sizes in Virginia range from 3 to 10 members. Arlington is right in the middle at 5. Most counties have bigger board members than Arlington, a higher number of board members than Arlington does. And 3 of the 4 largest counties in the state have more board members than Arlington does. And in terms of the dynamic of at large by district or combination of Virginia's 95 counties, only Arlington and 3 other counties much smaller elect all members at large. So that's just a little factoid or two. So let's launch this conversation. Number of county board members and how they're elected, district or at large or combination. Tanya, do you want to cajole our two panelists?
Well, I do. I think I'd be curious to have a little bit more elaboration on not just your perspective on at large versus district. And Ron, I think it'd be interesting to see, having served with a full at-large county board, as well as a board that was districted in Chris, you having been in a school board that had districts, but also appointed. I think a very unique fact for Virginia is that elected school boards are less than 20 years old here. And there's still counties in Virginia that I believe still appoint, some of the rural places. But as John mentioned, we are one of the few that has an only at-large school board. So I just wanted to add those points as you share a little bit about your thoughts and perspectives and direct experience on where you see the strengths in perhaps in a full at-large versus the strengths in districting. Because we hear that there are pros and cons for both. And I think that's the kind of work that would really help to inform the task force. So that's all I would add, John, in. I'd love to turn it over to our panelists.
Yeah, Ron, you want to start and then I'll take it into school boards?
Sure. Well, in terms of size, I think it's quality over quantity is what we want to try to achieve. And the more people you elect, the harder it is to get the quality necessarily. They're just, you know, there's a limited pool of people who are willing to put up with what Chris was talking about earlier and hold themselves out for election. So I think 5 works. I remember somebody asked me one time, well, what's it like to look to work for 5 Democratic board members? I said they might as well be from 5 different parties. They did not see eye to eye on almost anything. They didn't fight too much in public, but behind the scenes, there was a tremendous diversity of opinion for all the boards I worked with, whatever the political partisan makeup of it was. And just to remind people, it was a Republican majority when I started in Arlington in 1980. So if you go to districts, there may be a stronger need to enlarge the board. I think going beyond 9 begins to make it a little bit challenging to deal with. You want a board that's small enough that they can sit around the table and have a conversation. You don't want it to be a legislature. You want them to be able to have deep conversations and to hear everybody and for everybody to be heard. And 5 to 7 does that nicely. It can be done at 9, but it gets much harder above that. So let me stop there on the size and give Chris a chance to weigh in. Then I'll.
Yeah, I agree. My rule of thumb, by the way, is I'm not as erudite as Ron, but I'm just a more practical. I just spent my whole life counting votes. And so my deal is You ought to be able to get to your win number on one hand, which means 9 is sort of the max before you run out of fingers before you get to the win number. So I agree. I would say that in the United States, most school boards are between 5 and 7. They come in all shapes and sizes. There are school boards that are elected by district. There are school boards that are elected at large. There is the Alexandria method where there are districts, but they elect multi-members. There was in Virginia Beach a frankly screwball method where you were elected at large to then represent districts, which just made no sense to me at all. There is some belief, and I think we will start to see it playing out. And I am now going to ask Alan if he will put up on the screen. I've got 2 pieces of legislation that deal with the whole issue of at-large just in the chat, Alan. You can just do it in the chat, I think, so people can just copy it. But the General Assembly is definitely moving, I think, in a direction where they are looking less and less kindly at elections at large. There is a fear, and I think not entirely crazy, that at-large elections tend to dilute the impact of voters of color. And so there are 2 pieces of legislation that passed this year, one specifically dealing with that, as I say, kind of screwball Virginia Beach legislation, and then one, the more general Voting Rights Act of Virginia, which do not get quite to saying there will not be any at-large elections, but you know, they're in the, I would just say, if you are, you know, kind of having trouble sleeping one night, you might want to go read the legislation. But I do think I think the General Assembly is pointing some breadcrumbs that they are inclined to move away from election at large. Now, one of the things that you all were chartered to discuss, which is ranked choice voting. And, you know, it is possible, we don't know, maybe that could eliminate that worry. But, and so I think it will be interesting to see, we don't have enough experience yet with ranked choice voting to know what its impact might be on voters of color. But maybe that would be a solution. I don't know. I would just say, if I were you as a civic federation, I would at least start to think about the fact that the General Assembly seems to be moving toward some sort of voting by district.
So Chris, that's you make a good point. Let me just ask you this question. So you're having served on both the local school board and in the General Assembly, and being a student of politics, and now that the political complexion of the General Assembly has changed, do you see this this potential that you just mentioned as being one of the General Assembly conceivably mandating district elections, or would it be more of a local option that the locality itself would have the discretion to decide at large versus districts?
They already have the discretion. So I think they're moving. I think they're
without a referendum, though.
I think they're, well, you know how Arlington specifically, since it's, you know, all embedded in your charter, and since you've already had the lovely experience of trying to change your charter, you know, I would not want to make any real clear predictions about that. I would say that there has been historically some evidence that at-large voting tends to dilute the impact of voters of color. And I do know that that is a real concern of the General Assembly more generally. Now, interestingly, in Fairfax, when Tom Davis was chairman of the school board, he added 3 members to the school board that the chairman would appoint. And the idea was they would serve at large, but represent ethnic groups. So there would be one Latino representative, one African American representative, and one Asian American representative. Now, Tom being Tom, it was also really smart politics because he knew that gave him three extra votes on the school board and probably increased the likelihood that he could get some additional things through that board. I mean, you know, he was doing it both for policy and, you know, with Tom, there was always politics involved. It was a very smart decision. But when elected school boards came in, the law was that you took whatever method you had, whatever selection method you had, and it just moved over and became an elected process. So I would not be shocked if at some point in the future, because right now you cannot designate, you can't designate, this is the Asian board member seat. So it's just, they're just free at large positions. It would not be shocking to me if Fairfax eventually went to a system that more closely mirrored the county board with representatives elected in each magisterial district and then one person elected countywide who would serve as the chair for 4 years. That would not shock me. I would not guarantee that it's going to happen, but
Chris, how do you determine your school board chair in Fairfax?
It is rotating. And I will say this, when we became an elected board, there were two of us who ran for board chair. I was one. And then one was a guy who had run countywide. He had obviously, because he ran in all the districts, gotten more votes than I did. I had gotten a higher percentage of votes in my district than he did. And he laid out to the board his belief that only an at-large board member should serve as the chairman of the board. And at that point, the school board made the determination. They elected me as the first chair. So they obviously were not persuaded by that argument. And ever since, the chairmanship in Fairfax rotates either every year or every other year. And the chairmanship is elected by the full board.
And John, I want to just jump in here because I know that there are Arlingtonians who aren't familiar with the Arlington County School Board. And that is the tradition here in Arlington County that the chair rotates annually within the five elected school board members, and generally is by seniority, you know, depending on your term of service. And I've always found it interesting to see when we have two new school board members, how they will choose to do that. So that'll be an interesting thing to come up in the next couple of years. I did want to explore a little bit with what you were saying, Chris, and ask Ron, how did you see any, I appreciated what you shared about it didn't really matter the amount of school board members or their party affiliation. You always had very diverse opinions from each person. And my question to you would be, I believe you've also served in a county government where you had district and at-large members on your board, is that correct? Could you talk a little bit about that dynamic? Because I know that exists in Fairfax, Chris, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it too. But what is it like at the county level when you have at-large and district, this hybrid model? And then curious to hear from both of you if you think that hybrid model is something that the state legislature may look into, because that is something I know that we would be exploring in the work of the task force, not just moving full district, but having this sort of hybrid model. And if we add members, you know, how many at large versus how many districting, that kind of dynamic, because having, as John and I know, having served that, I can imagine that would change the discussion at the table if you're a district and versus representing at large.
Well, it definitely does. The advantage of the at large system is that everybody has to represent everybody and has to be concerned about the entire community. The downside of that system is if you don't have the diversity of representation that's representative of your community. So as Chris has articulated, the challenge of the at-large system has mostly come from the lack of minority representation. And at large, I would say, is probably a bit of an anachronism today. Although if a community is small enough and you are able to consistently elect a diversity of candidates, there's no reason why it could not survive. District system, I think, is highly problematic because it just balkanizes the community. And you end up, say you have five districts or seven districts. We had in Charlotte, we had seven districts. Yeah, you have seven little mayors. And you know, they begin focusing on their little piece of the geography. And you get a lot of deference from one board member to the other because everybody wants to be left alone to do what they want to do in their district, which becomes especially problematic on location of facilities, affordable housing, planning, a whole host of things can become very parochial very quickly. Nonetheless, if you don't have the diversity of representation, it's hard to justify an at-large system for the long term. The hybrid system, I think, has some real promise to it because you do have multiple people on the elected body that do have to take into account all of the electorate, and they can play valuable roles of brokering decisions that are best for the full community. In Charlotte, the whole thing was too large. We had seven districts, three at large and a mayor. So we had 13 people. If we had a crisis come up and I needed to call every member of the council, it pretty much took me all day to do it. Whereas, you know, in about 30 minutes, I could reach everybody on the Arlington board. So again, you want to keep it relatively small. The balance between at large and district, there's no magic number there. Arlington geographically is quite small. And it certainly will open a huge can of worms to decide how you would draw those districts. And that will become very, probably very partisan and very political and perhaps even very polarized. Although I would say that if there is a trend that is worthy giving serious consideration to, it is a district or preferably, I would say, some type of hybrid system.
Yeah. I just chime in? Could I just build on one thing Ron says, John? I'm sorry. I just wanted to say.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
One of the most important things I think that school board members particularly need to learn, I think it's a little less true because local government deals with zoning in particular, which just is always tied to a place. You know, school boards don't do that so much. There isn't really a Mount Vernon math versus a McLean math. So that makes it a little less salient for school boards. But the first thing you learn on day one of your orientation is that while the school board has a great deal of power and authority, you as an individual board member have none. You, unless you are sitting at the board table and acting as a part of the corporate body, you have no power and authority. This is always a shock to some people who have just newly been elected and think this means they're going to get to go in and tell teachers to change what's on their bulletin boards, as near as I can tell. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's and thanks.
And I think that particularly happens in the city or county government where once you have people elected from district, they want to have their own staff, they want to have their district office, they want to be responsible for constituent services within their district, and you begin really undermining what is supposed to be a corporate body that acts collectively through the city or county manager and provides a unified government as opposed to a balkanized government.
So we're watching the clock. It's now 7:45, so we do need to move on to the next topic. But before we do, let me just ask a quick question. So Ron, you mentioned about, you know, the power of the pen and who draws those lines. So Chris, in Fairfax, are the magisterial and school board member lines redrawn every 10 years to take account of the census? And who does that, a computer or a tribunal?
Oh, it's the world's most Fairfax County Commission. I mean, it's a lot. Think about an Arlington commission on it, except it's just bigger. But it's the same thing. It's everybody from the League of Women Voters and, you know, two representatives from each district. But even though, you know, thanks to the Supreme Court, the Voting Rights Act doesn't carry a lot of power anymore, Fairfax and Arlington, I think, still very much are committed to the principles of the Voting Rights Act. So I think that's what you will see.
Okay, so the district process at least is workable in Fairfax. In terms of the reapportionment and drawing the lines.
Yeah, Ron, in Charlotte. When I was on the school board, my district ran, I don't even know how far, it was a big old J and ran way down to Lorton and Occoquan, and it was so big. But, it's big county.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
What you found in the original transition of districts were minority groups seeking representation. What you find in highly urbanized areas like Charlotte today is more conservative white neighborhoods that are advocating for districts so that they can ensure that they have conservative voice on the city council.
Okay. Tanya, do you want to?
I think it'd be great segue to go into the staggered versus synchronous elections. And we don't have to spend a lot of time on that, but we know that Alexandria has synchronous elections. Fairfax and I'm not sure about Fairfax actually, but I know Arlington has staggered.
All at the same time, yeah.
And in Arlington, you'll hear, people are civically engaged all the time, but then you also hear people are tired of having to vote every year in trying to understand who they're voting for and what that means every year locally. So I'm curious to see what y'all's experience has been with staggered versus synchronous, the strengths and the weaknesses in that. And you can maybe also touch on term limits if that plays into it, so we can touch on a couple more topics we have listed.
Ron, you want to start?
Yeah, just very quickly, electing everybody at the same time is a terrible idea. You really fall victim to the whim of the moment. And I saw that happen in Loudoun County, where they did a couple of really major flip-flops in two different four-year elections. Annual elections are a bit trying because there's always an election coming up and going on. But staggering every other year, four-year terms, I think is a very workable solution.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And when it comes to term limits, and I think we would all agree on this, we have term limits. They're called elections. If you're not happy with how your elected representative is working, just vote for someone else. And in Virginia, as Tanya points out, it's like a bus. There's one that comes along every year. There's another election every year for somebody.
Yeah, I'm the same. Same on term limits.
I do think it's interesting to note that both right now, both the school board and the county board in Arlington, the school board is very young, a majority in their first term, and the county board has a combination of a couple of first termers, a couple of second termers, and one more senior person. So there is periodic turnover on both of our boards for a variety of reasons.
And at the same time, Arlington had Ellen Bosman on the board for 20-something years, and weren't we blessed by that?
Well, and yeah, Fairfax had Janie Strauss on the school board for 20-plus years. Bob Fry was on for more than 20 years. Tony Lane was on for more than 20 years. And I will tell you, as a first-year school board member, Tony Lane represented the adjoining district for me. We were very similar. And I cannot tell you the number of times I called Tony to say, just fill me up. What's the deal? You need
so let me just mention, by the way, there's a lot of questions building in the chat. We are going to be getting to the chat once we're done with this initial banter, and hopefully everybody will have an opportunity to either be recognized by a raised hand or by our calling out the question in the chat. So another couple of variables that kind of go together are compensation, as well as full versus part-time status and outside income limitations, good or bad. So right now, even though the board, most people believe is underpaid and is paid for part-time work, most county board members, and I'm sure the case is the same way with the school board, treat the job as most of the board members treat the job as full-time or close to full-time. Some have outside income, some don't. So tell us a little bit about your perspective in terms of compensation and full versus part-time status and outside income limitations, if any.
Chris, you want to start that one?
Yeah, I will start. I do believe in particular, I'm going to speak more for school boards here than for county government, where I just think they are slightly different animals. I think it's really important that school board members not be full-time. Mm-hmm. I think you have to have other outside experience. It is a full-time job. It is public service of the first order. And I will tell you that, you know, most of us who leave, who certainly left board service in Fairfax, and then in my case, then left the legislature. I mean, I just couldn't afford to do it. So that's a real problem. On the other hand, you know, I don't know that you want a person who is full time as a school board member, even if it takes a lot of hours. But then, you know, that does of necessity limit who can run, right? So it is a very difficult and thorny issue. I come down on the side of adequate compensation, but not full-time for school boards. And I will let Ron be the guru on local government.
Well, I think the compensation does need to be fair. We've traditionally been really cheap when it comes to paying elected officials, mm-hmm. and that does preserve an elitist system. Mm-hmm. People that don't have some kind of support just can't do it. And in Arlington, that's mostly been from a spouse, whether it was the woman that was the earner for the men, or the men were the earner for the women. And we've had both on the county board. We became who we are because of stay-at-home moms, and then we transitioned to stay-at-home dads. But unless you've got that support, you just can't do it. So I think fair compensation gives a greater opportunity for more diversity on the board. Full-time or part-time, it's full-time whether you want it to be or not. If you're doing the job, the question is, will we hold the elected officials accountable for doing their job and not trying to do other people's jobs? And so, for instance, you know, trying to interfere on the administrative side of government is the area where we have concern. There's plenty of policy work. We really need a representative focused full-time on Metro. We need a representative focused full-time on COG. We need a representative focused really on NVPDC. There are a lot of regional bodies and a lot of work in addition to just being out in the community and talking with the community and interacting with the community that makes it really impossible for any board member that has any of their regional assignments to have another job that is of any demand whatsoever.
So Ron, isn't that an argument also though for perhaps adjusting the board upward in numbers to share those extra, I don't want to say extracurricular, but those regional bodies and tasks across a greater number of people?
Actually, I think 5 to 7 can accommodate it. Basically, each board member only takes on one major assignment, and then everything else is the community work. So I think 5 to 7, you can pretty much cover that well. You grow it too large, then you have people looking for stuff to do. And you don't want people looking for stuff to do. You want them to have very clear policy responsibilities and to give them the compensation and time to work on those policy areas.
And oh my God, your meetings go on and on. I mean, each new board member, remember that now that everything is televised, everybody expects everybody to talk on every issue, every meeting. And so every new board member that you add just that time just goes like that.
It's funny that you say that, because when I met with Frank Wilson, who served on the school board for, I believe it was over 25 years, one of the best pieces of advice he gave me was, if you don't always have to speak, Tanya. If you don't have something to say, it's okay to not say anything.
Frank Wilson was a very, very good school board member.
Yeah.
I loved him, and that was wise advice.
Yes, it was great. And I will share, I don't know if we have time to discuss this today, because I do want to give the opportunity for the public to ask questions, but one of the challenges that we've found in the Arlington School Board, our parents expect us to be available 24/7. And so we have had the challenge with our school board members who work full time, you know, managing that. And the discussion has come about, you know, do we need more school board members to have more school liaisons so that we can balance that out? Do we keep it? And I think that's where the full-time versus part-time, but I do agree that helping school board members focus on policy making versus administration management, and then helping the community to understand the difference. Because I know in Arlington, even with the pandemic work, we've had a lot of community members ask us to do the operational to make decisions on operations and administrative work and not policy decisions. And figuring out what the line is between that, I think it's a delicate line. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can get blurry sometimes, but it's definitely an interesting discussion to have. And I really appreciate both of your feedback on that.
Well, you know, the story that I always tell, because it's so horrific, is that I once was lobbied. We were having a debate about whether the swim and dive program in Fairfax would be a varsity sport or a club sport. And so a person took it upon herself to lobby me as I was standing in the line to receive communion at my church, which was, I would just like to say, not an optimal time to get me into a position to hear what it was she wanted to say. You're right. People do feel like, you know, they just are entitled to talk to you at any point. So yeah, and I feel like it is really important as a board member to set some boundaries. And for me, I wasn't sure at that point where they were, but I was really sure that they extended to not in the communion line.
So one of the keys to knowing where those boundaries are between administration and policy is making sure that the elected officials have plenty of time to have this conversation among themselves. What I have found is that any number of city council or board members have wanted to run things administratively, but they didn't want anybody else on the board to do it either. They didn't want anybody else to. And they wanted to make sure that I didn't let the other people meddle in things that they wanted to meddle in. And so by the elected officials having the opportunity to come together and have informal conversation and talk about policy and the lines and how they hold one another accountable is really important. And that's hard because everything has to be public. You know, you can't have more than two board members talking with each other. And I would tell you in Arlington, we were very strict about that. If I had two board members and someone else walked up, mm-hmm. the conversation stopped and they said, somebody's got to leave.
Yep.
We were very strict about that. Yet at the same time, they need to have the ability to sit around a conference table, not secretly, but intimately, and have these conversations about their roles.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for that perspective. John, I just want to point out, there's a couple of things we didn't touch on, which are ranked choice voting or first past the vote, vehicles for public engagement, and county school board staffing. Maybe we pick one more and then turn it over to the audience to see if they can bring some questions towards the other two.
Sure. That's fine. I guess I would just briefly love to know each of your feelings about county board and school board staffing, because, you know, there's one thing that I felt, and I'm just going to be very blunt about this now that I'm not in office anymore, is as a county board member, sometimes you really feel handicapped in terms of the knowledge that you may have or the knowledge you're being fed, so to speak, by professional staff compensated well, they know a ton, but let's face it, they're going to spin things the way they want them. Not everybody, but a lot of them, and you'd really like to have, you know, be able to look over your shoulder and say, you know, ask a staffer, is that true? Or could you please look into that for me? Or what's the other side? And so on the county board, we each board member does have an administrative assistant type of person. But Tanya, I don't think on the school board side that you don't even have individual staffers on a board member by board member basis, right?
We don't, which again is another reason why I think it's more of a full-time gig here in Arlington. We have a school board clerk, and as anyone who is familiar with that office management, they really do a lot of work that is not executive assistant work, but managing the operational functions of putting on a school board meeting, community engagement, and making sure that the system is running for all board members. And the deputy clerk is her main support staff. So once they've handled those responsibilities, they support us to the best of their ability. And I will say that while I was on the school board, we had a phenomenal staff. They're still there. And I think our school board clerk is actually retiring this summer, and she's been there for a long time. So, but we've often talked about what that would look like if we each had an assistant who would help us schedule, and who would help us maybe, hey, look, this policy is coming up. Can you look at the history of that policy and want to be informed? So, you know,
Fairfax does have that, Tanya.
Fairfax County School Board does have. Fascinating.
It took a while. Initially, it was one administrative assistant to every four board members. And I think now it might be 1-to-1. It's certainly 1-to-2. But it is, they're still not going to necessarily be the world's greatest accounting person or whatever. But John, what you said about wanting to know the answer that maybe the professional staff doesn't necessarily want you to know. There was a point in Fairfax when we were debating whether we were going to continue the merit pay program for teachers. And the superintendent was very supportive of it. And as a result, of course, all of the professional staff who reported to the superintendent, as they should, reflected that position. But, and this is where having some board members who have some time on the board is key, because all of a sudden at one board meeting, one of the experienced board members asked in exactly the right way the question that just revealed, you know, that it was wildly disparate, and that schools in McLean were giving way more awards than schools in the Route 1 area. And it went on and on and on. And we watched when that question was asked, you could just see the look on the superintendent's face. It was like, oh, well. You know, they figured it out. So it is both. Okay. Sometimes it's staff, but sometimes you just need really smart board members.
Yeah, I think it's a really bad idea for board members to have individual policy analysts who are going to work the agendas of the individual board members. Again, they're supposed to function as a collective. Yeah. And if you feel like you're not getting the breadth of information or the objective information that you want from the county staff, they are your staff. You hire the county manager. They are your staff. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel like you're getting what you need in an objective manner and the way that you need it, you need to bring that person in executive session and have a real heart-to-heart talk, because the manager is obligated to fulfill the informational needs objectively as the county board itself collectively decides. What you end up doing with individual staff is individual board members will go off on their own tangents, and they will advocate oftentimes for what is a position that does not have the support of the rest of the board, and you begin dividing up and potentially undermining the overall policy direction of the board, as well as the administrative authority of the manager.
So Ron, question, can you skin that cat, as I understand it's been done in at least one locality, by having a small group of policy research people for the entire board? In other words, when there's a consensus among the board that they want to look at something else, or they're concerned about something, that they would have those folks on the payroll in the board office versus professional staff under the aegis of the manager?
Sure. So down in Norfolk, we have the headquarters of PETA, and we don't skin any cats anymore. That notwithstanding, I think when the board starts hiring people other than the manager, you begin to divide up the responsibilities of government. Now, you do appoint your clerk and the county attorney, and I think those are real, really critical positions to be appointed by the board.
And the county auditor.
That's right. You have that, which emerged after I left. And I think that's enough. Otherwise, you begin to really fragment things and you don't have unified command. I think if you want research, that needs to be a discussion with a manager. If you want somebody external to do it, then I would have an RFP and bring someone in external to do it rather than standing up and a bureaucracy that would be ongoing.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree.
I just noticed we have another person who recently parachuted into the virtual the discussion here, former House of Delegates member Karen Darner. And Kristen, I don't know if you overlapped with Karen or not.
Oh, we did. We did. And she was just, I saw her and I got so excited. Hey, Karen, it's good to see you.
I just found out about this today. I've been out of town. So it's been wonderful to listen to and to hear terrific discussion. Actually, that's when you don't have one opinion, that's actually kind of good. That's a good showing up listening skills as well as putting things together. And I know it's hard to do. And it's
that's what we're looking to
incredible
do.
What the county has done over this whole year and a half. That's all there is to it.
Thanks, Karen.
Keep talking.
So. Great to see you, Karen. I'm a big Karen Darner fan.
Yeah, it's great to see you, Ron. Good to see you, John.
Likewise. Tanya?
So, John, I want to honor both our speakers' time and our public's
yep.
time. And just for everyone in the audience, the two things we weren't able to touch on were ranked choice voting or first class vote and vehicles for public engagement. But one of our first questions is from Sharon Valencia regarding public engagement. So I would love to go there first, and we'll try to cover the questions in the chat and then go to raised hands. What do you think, John?
That sounds good.
Okay. So Ron and Chris, the question that Ms. Valencia put forth is, and I think this is geared to Ron, but I think Chris, if you have anything to add, especially from the school board perspective, we would appreciate that. It says, Ron, I recently heard that the treatment of consent agenda items at board meetings has changed. I have heard it is used more now. The public was able to move an item off the consent item to require a vote, et cetera. Could you please say how they worked when you were county manager? Thanks.
Yeah, so I moved to actually use consent items more because many of them were just ministerial and wanted to preserve as much time as possible in the county board meetings for the policy issues. Now, I don't know what the current policies are, but when I was county manager, any board member could pull an item off the consent agenda and any member of the public could request an item be pulled off the consent agenda. And that seemed to be very generous to me. In some communities, only an elected official, only a council member can pull the item. A citizen can request it, but only the elected official can pull it. And if that's still true in Arlington, then an individual can request it. Now, we did have times, things went crazy and we had some people come in and try to pull every single consent item just to be disruptive, but you find ways to work around that. Citizen engagement is critical and meaningful citizen engagement occurs way beyond what goes on at the formal meetings. It's really what goes on at the in the community level. And one of the most important things the elected officials on the policy area need to be doing, as well as the administrative officials, is being out in the community and talking with people with where they are. Most people are too busy to come to a county board meeting, yet they need to have their opinions heard and they need to see their officials and be able to articulate their concerns.
Yeah, I totally agree. And what I would say and the advice I always give elected officials is that the population of people on Twitter is not in any way reflective of the voters. It's polarized.
One of my favorite stories was when Hurricane Isabel or Tropical Storm Isabel came through, a lot of people had their power out. And for the first couple of days, the calls coming in to courthouse where, people were tolerant and everything. And after about third or fourth day, people were getting really intolerant and we were getting these really ugly calls that were really testing the nerves of staff who were otherwise normally really patient. They just hadn't seen this kind of ugliness. And so, you know, I left, got in the car, went out to some of the neighborhoods that had the power off for multiple days and just walked around the neighborhood talking to people. And I found an entirely different attitude than the people that were calling into the office. People understood everybody couldn't get their power on at the same time. They were talking to their neighbors, they were supporting their neighbors, and they were showing the kind of resilience and values that you would expect. But if we had just reacted to the people calling, we would have had a very different kind of perception of the people of Arlington.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I do just want to add that on the school board, it is only school board members who can pull an item off consent. It only takes one school board member to pull it off. So if you know, a school board member says, I want this off consent, it immediately goes into the agenda. But in the 4 years that I served, knowing that my term just ended in December, at no point in time did we ever, as far as I know, allow a community member to pull something off.
Yeah.
Off consent.
But they could, in a general assembly, one member could pull anything out of the block.
I think that a citizen can is great. I do think it's essential that a single board member be able to pull a consent item. That's an important prerogative as an elected official.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So John, want to move on to the next question?
Sure.
Okay, great. So the next question is by Mr. Schutz. He asks, do you see primaries as diluting the voice of underrepresented groups?
So I guess before Kristen's starting to move her hand and gesticulate, so let me maybe interpret the questioner's question a little bit, in that, you know, one of the Atlantic magazine, for example, just had a very fascinating article which championed in an effort to detoxify the rampant polarization across the country from far left to far right, is the idea of maybe scrapping primaries and letting everybody go on to the general election, allowing parties to endorse and have sample ballots, but not have the primaries as screening devices anymore. The argument being that the primaries are exclusionary and anti-competitive. And what might be even more exclusionary and anti-competitive, of course, are party caucuses. The Democrats do it, the Republicans do it, whether it's school board or in some cases in the past, the parties have done county board caucuses. Now, of course, in Virginia, we don't have party registration. So anybody, for example, can show up in the Democratic primary tomorrow. But what are your thoughts on primaries, caucuses, and the role of parties in controlling or screening who's on the ballot?
Well, and I'm just going to jump in because I don't know if I'd want to say controlling or screening. I think that's an opinion. So I would say, you know, how do primaries impact our ability to objectively select a straight pool?
Fair enough.
But you just don't have a lot of participation any way you look at it. If you have a general primary at regular voting precincts on regular primary days, then you're going to get, and there's some competitive races, you'll get some decent turnout. But if it's a caucus or a firehouse primary, then you're just going to get the usual suspects. And it is very much about the people who are in the know and are, you know, doing what they do. So I'm a registered independent for a long time, ever since I started working in local government. And I really like the ability to vote in a Republican or Democratic primary, as I may be moved to do based on the candidates. I don't know, Chris, you got a measured solution?
Yeah, well, my view is this, that, you know, I mean, there are all sorts of people who make endorsements in elections, right? In Montgomery County, it is not the endorsement of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party that is key. There is a group that puts out what they call the Apple ballot and for school board. And that is the endorsement that you want, because that's the one that voters take. But the reality is that if you're running even for county board and certainly for school board. It is a low information. It is a low information election. People come to the polls. They know who they're voting for governor. They know who they're voting for president. You get down to, you know, you're just on the school board. You're just ahead of the soil and water board. And a lot of people don't have any idea. So having your name on that sample ballot does matter. And my view is political. If you have asked the Democratic Party or the Republican Party to support you and to put your name before the voters at every polling place in your district or in your entire community, then it's okay. They get to set the rules and you either choose to follow them or not. You don't have to ask for an endorsement of a party.
Thank you. I just want to note to everyone that we could spend tons of time on each one of these questions. So I want to just honor the fact that we know that this could be a lively debate and we could probably spend a whole session on any one of these topics, but I do want to try to cover as much as possible. So the next question is from Mr. Adam Theo. It says, since we were just talking about how the chair is appointed year to year among board members, and this question came in when we were talking about the rotation, would it be within the scope of this committee to recommend the appointed chair not be one up for re-election? There have been many years where the appointed chair happens to be up for re-election that year. So your thoughts on that and maybe your experience.
Well, of course, in Arlington, that was with great intentionality because the majority is the one that actually names who the chair is, and they want the person who's up for election that year to get reelected. So there wasn't much of a hidden agenda there in any way whatsoever. I would point out that the rotation is strictly a prerogative of the board. They choose their chair annually, but they can choose the same person year after year. They don't have to rotate it. And generally the reason that it does is because everybody wants to be chair. And all of them, like I said earlier, would probably like to be chair for 4 years, but they don't want anybody else to be chair for 4 years. And so if you begin actually electing the chair directly by the public, as you would a mayor, as it's done in most of the localities around Arlington, then you're going to have county board members basically competing with each other to be the chair. That becomes the focal point. And it does diminish the role somewhat of the other members, notwithstanding that it's still a collective and the chair does not really have significantly more power than the other board members, but it does change the dynamics. So, you know, that person was elected directly and is going to be there for 4 years. And if they don't do a good job, you're stuck with them for 4 years. If they do a great job, you can elect them for four more.
Hey, so, I mean, boards could have at least an informal agreement. Hey, you know, nobody will run more than twice, and we will not run in a year that we're up for election. Now, one of the things, of course, is if everybody's elected in the same year, then that would mean that once every 4 years, you couldn't have a chair. So that would be a good argument for a staggered voting system.
Yeah, I wouldn't have arbitrary rules on it. I think if the chair is elected by the board members, the board members should be free to elect the person they think can best serve as chair.
So Ron and Chris, do you feel on continuing on this for just another second? I mean, one argument against the status quo is that by this constant rotation of chairs, that the identity of the jurisdiction is hampered or limited because people in other counties, other municipalities, elsewhere in the state, and so forth, they have to get used to a new face of the county each year rather than somebody who endures for 2, 3, 4, 5 years or longer. I mean, do you see that as much of a handicap?
I don't as a whole lot. You know, when you do elect the person, and that it's like districts, that is the trend, is to elect your chief for the chief elected officer, mayor or chair, to be chosen directly by the voters. So that's the trend. And it is a trend because people do want strong leadership and they want consistent leadership. And that requires two things, that you have somebody of those qualities run and that they actually get elected. And in my 3 years in Charlotte, I went through 5 mayors, count them 5. And the last one I worked for was absolutely despised by all every other member of council. They didn't support her candidacy for mayor, and they began working to undermine her the very day after the election. And it was a really miserable 2 years. She only served one term, and they only served 2 years there, which is another problem. But when you have your chief elected official as someone who has policy positions that are counter to the majority of the board, and they are the ones out there representing the board day in and day out over a 4 year period, it can be really problematic. Now, cities and counties work through that all over the country. It's not, that's just, you know, that's the hazard of democracy, shall I say.
Yeah, and I would just say in Fairfax, I mean, yes, there were rotating chairs, but there were also certain people. The budget chair often was a person who continued over many years. The instruction chair might be someone who continued over many years. So the flip side of maybe a rotating leadership issue is that you do have some members who develop deep expertise in subject matter. And that's helpful to the board, I think.
I could remember Mary Margaret Whipple being just, you know, the expert on Metro. And she wasn't just an Arlington person. I think Metro saw her as a leader for the entire region.
So, Tanya, maybe we can transition over to any Q&A with our audience. If people would like to raise their hands. I mean, come on, don't be bashful. I also just want to quickly recognize that Kathy McSweeney, the chair of our planning commission, is now in attendance, and Dulce Carrillo from the school system is here with us tonight. So come on, folks, raise your hands.
And I do want to also share that we have Ms. Valencia and Mr. Theo asked another question, but we want to give other people an opportunity. If not, we'll go to those two questions. And Ms. Mary Hines, the Honorable Mary Hines, did make a comment that I thought was important based on our discussion about, she mentioned that she just talked to a few new school board members around the region. There was a large turnover in 2019 and very hard for folks to come on all at the same time and pick up the reins effectively. So that's what she's hearing as a former elected. And as you all know, electeds and former electeds, a lot of new people come on seeking that counsel or advice. So I think that was interesting. Comment. We did get another question from Mr. Beer in the chat. I don't see any hands up. Mr. Wimbush, who's our wonderful chair, do you see any hands up that I can't note? Oh.
Nope, just Michael's hand went up for a moment, but other than that, we don't have any hands up yet. So feel free to, go to Michael if you like.
Great, thank you. Michael Beer, would you like me to read your question or do you want to share it with us?
Hi, everybody. I'm so impressed with the discussion here, and I know we have amazing people, former county board people and other distinguished people on this call. I would love to hear from so many. I do have a question in the chat, which is around the nonpartisanship issue of school boards. And I would like it by the end of the day, if I can get a second question here, which relates very generally to the principles that inform this task force. Do you, any of you, have suggestions on how we can improve the quality of our elected officials' representation in policymaking and to improve citizen engagement and voter turnout? Those are two of the main principles for this task force, and we would welcome ideas that you would have to improve the quality of elected representation in policymaking and to improve citizen engagement and voter turnout. Would love to hear your thoughts on that, and I have the question also in the chat.
Chris Ron, do you want to answer this first piece and then I can read the question in the chat?
Good, Chris.
Well, I think, it is the kinds of people who run for office now are a little different from the kinds of people who ran for office when I first went on the school board in 1991. They are more political. That is, I talked to the School Boards Association. That is just the nature of the beast right now. Everything is becoming political. And I wish that were not true. I am of the old school where we ought to just go in a room and compromise. But that's not sort of the direction that things are moving. So I don't know what to say. I wish I could figure it out. I don't have an answer to that. I think the only thing you can say about getting, you know, getting the kinds of people involved in politics that you want is, first of all, just, you know, have the farm team system. So let people serve on various boards and commissions and PTA and school improvement committees, all of those things, because if you come to a board or an elected body with at least a basic grasp of what they're doing, look, there were people that I did not agree with fundamentally on any number of issues, but boy, I knew that they knew their stuff. And when they talked, I figured I better pay attention to what they had to say. And then there were people, you know, who probably at the end of the day were going to vote my way, but I kind of thought they were idiots. And I wasn't really. That was when I got up and went to the bathroom.
Yeah, I think this is a really difficult challenge that we face. The polarization at the local level is very disheartening, because I just don't see local issues as being Republican and Democratic. I think they're much more nuanced than that. Mm-hmm. And so it really does fall to the leaders, the current leaders, formal and informal, elected and not elected, to really recruit and mentor people. As Chris said, the typical way of doing is bringing people in on boards and commissions and give them an opportunity to learn and to grow, but really recruiting them to start with and mentoring them. My favorite story of all time is Jim Hunter and how Walter Tejada, you know, ended up in his office complaining about soccer fields, and Jim Hunter recruited him to be on the Park and Recreation Commission, and then he ultimately ran for the county board and became chair. And that kind of intentionality, which of course was very deeply a part of who Jim Hunter was and everything that he did, we need to carry, more of us need to carry on that legacy and help bring people who otherwise would have never thought about running to know that they have an opportunity and that they can get support from existing leaders.
Look, when I had decided I was going to leave the school board in 1999, I didn't know what I was going to do, except I kept telling people, I hope it involves those, you know, rum drinks with little pink umbrellas in. And even then, people who looked like me, which is to say with my chromosomal pattern, were never asked by parties to be their elected, you know, their standard bearer. But it was the party that came to me and said, you have to run for the General Assembly. And so I did. That's the other thing is, you know, you just need to ask people.
Yes.
And I will tell you, Rana, that's exactly how it happened with me and Emma. I went in to speak to the Honorable Emery Lon Sanchez about a middle school. I think they were looking at doing block scheduling. And the next thing I know, I'm on two or three committees. And 5 years later, they're recruiting me to run for the school board.
So, and that was so Emma.
So I just wanted to share that actually
worked. Emma.
That was so works. So I see Mike Campbell has a question. And then I want to just let Michael Beer know that after Mike Campbell, I don't see any hands up, so I'll go to Sharon's second question, John Theo's second question, then Michael Beer's second question, and that'll probably take us to the end of the session, and we'll play with that time. Is that okay with Chris and Ron? Is that okay with your time?
Sure.
Thank you. So, Mr. Campbell, if you can ask your question.
Yeah,
briefly and succinctly.
And thanks, everybody, for this great panel this evening. And this question is primarily for Mr. Carley. Have you experienced any of the counties throughout the country have experienced implementing ranked choice voting or other alternative voting methods that you're familiar with?
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't. I have not done any analytical work on it. I am very intrigued with it, though. And to the extent that the Tiger team does some research there, please share with me your work. I'd be interested in perhaps building on what you find. I think it's worth exploration.
Yeah, I think the New York City primary is going to be ranked choice.
Yeah.
Mayoral primary. I mean, it's just really new. I think a lot of us are intrigued by it, but there just isn't much data yet.
And if
it's not as new as it's really been around in several places and around the world also. So it is being implemented, yeah. And it's gaining a lot of momentum.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting option, and I'll be really fascinated to see how it works.
As you gathered that information, not just about how it works and what the results have been, but also how they've educated voters, because I think it will take a very intense voter education effort to help let people understand how it works so they understand the results when they come.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, some voters may just say, I'm just going to name my first choice and I don't really care. I'm just going to, you know, bullet vote, so to speak. And of course, that in a system of ranked choice voting, you're yielding power then to those who do decide to rank one through X or whomever, how many folks are on the ballot. Let's go to Michael Beer's second question, if we could.
Well, I just want to be fair because Sharon asked the second question and so did Mr. Theo.
Do we have a new person?
So I just want to honor, if we're going to second rounds, I want to honor Sharon and Mr. Theo and then go to Michael Beer in that order. And then
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, great. So Sharon's second question, and I have to find it, was regarding the ombudsman in the county board. Here it is. It says the county currently, I just lost it, I'm sorry. It was all set.
That's okay, I actually read it. So okay. What she wanted to know, as I understood it, does it lack independence when reporting to the county manager, and is there a better structure for it? And so I would say, I think the county manager is the right structure. Dealing with constituent issues, customer service is a fundamental responsibility of the county manager. In fact, I started my career in Birmingham, Alabama as the ombudsman for the mayor. And if the manager does not have a system or structure that is working for the board, or the board is not getting the reports and in an objective and systematic way from the ombudsman, which they should, then once again, the manager works for the board, and the manager needs to bring the manager in and have a really hard conversation about what the expectations are around customer service and the reporting that comes from the ombudsman or any other of the other senior officials. While the board should not be micromanaging and running things administratively, they do have a fundamental responsibility to provide oversight and to make sure they know what's going on and how it's being done and that's consistent with their policies.
So Ron, what would you think about the New York model of a independently elected public advocate?
I probably would not want to work there. And that's one of the things, the more you fragment the manager's responsibility and the manager's having to compete with various other appointees, you will diminish your pool of candidates for manager as well.
Thank you. And Chris, I just would ask if you could answer briefly, did Fairfax County have an ombudsman? I know that the Arlington County School Board explored that.
Board has had one. I don't know if they do now.
Okay.
It was never kind of part of the culture. It's a big part of the culture in the District of Columbia.
Okay. Yeah, Arlington County has in the past discussed having an ombudsman for, but that was the question, who does it report to, the superintendent or the school board? So I did note that Adam Theo asked this question prior to Sharon, so I apologize, it was afterwards, and then we'll go to Michael's, and I think then we'll be able to wrap up and honor everyone's time. Mr. Theo's next question was, what about hybrid between staggering and synchronous, splitting total seats between 2 years instead of all four? Any examples of that being used in the state? And this was, I think, when we were talking about staggering versus synchronous elections. So it was in that part of the conversation.
Yeah, so that's a fairly common model. People are elected for 4 years. You elect half of them plus one year, and then the other half 2 years later. And so you're on a two-year rotational cycle as opposed to annually and as opposed to everybody being up at the same time.
Yeah, and interestingly, Ron, in my home city of Lincoln, Nebraska, they do it that way where the three at-large members are all elected 1 year, and then 2 years later, the four district members are elected. And that seems to have a lot of acceptability from folks.
And in Fairfax County, Chris, at the do they elect it all at once, the school board members?
They are. It's really not a good system for exactly the reasons Ron was talking about earlier with the Loudoun County Board. There just is a body of knowledge that you need to be effective. And so having that all rotate off at the same time is not a good idea. And God help the superintendent or county manager who has to deal with 8 of 12 new board members.
Okay.
I asked the county manager in Loudoun when they had their first coup. I said, are you going to stay? Are they going to let you stay? He said, yeah, I'm planning to stay and I'm going to work with them because that's my job. And then of course, 4 years later, they flipped again. And so I admired him. He was very professional about it and very respectful of the voters. And fortunately, the whole new group that came in were respectful of the form of government.
Okay, thank you.
But the policies were in chaos.
Yeah, I was on the County Cities and Towns Committee in the House. And, you know, 1 year the Loudoun County government would come and say they were in favor of X. And the next year they'd come and say, yeah, we're now opposed to it. So it was very complicated.
Thank you. I think that's very helpful for us as we move this work forward. And then Mr. Beer's question that he had put in the chat was, how does Fairfax handle the nonpartisan issue of school boards? In Arlington, the Democratic Party uses an endorsement system for school board with a caucus. Federal government employees have to run as independent candidates. They never win. Does Fairfax have this dynamic? Please opine.
Opining is one of my favorite things. Fairfax has run the school board endorsement process. This year it was sort of a firehouse primary. It was a kind of a hot mess, actually. And I think they will not do it quite that same way next time. The issue I think that we need to remember is that, and I just put into the chat, there is about every 15, 20 years, an organized movement to take over school boards and to teach sort of one way of teaching. And it's, when I ran, it was, there was a group of board candidates that wanted to teach creationism in our science classes. And they were gonna run under the radar. And, you know, without any kind of vetting formal process, you would not have known that. There is another conservative PAC this year that is going to try to do the same thing. They're very clear that they're trying to take over local school boards. So I will only say that when I was on the school board in Fairfax, Stuart Gibson, who was a Justice Department attorney and always had to run without any party endorsement because he was hatched, one was on the board for, 8, maybe 12 years. I reject the premise that federal employees always lose. I don't think they have to.
Ron, I know that you actually do some of this work now as an educator. Would you add anything on to what Chris has shared regarding this topic?
No, I think she's addressed it pretty well. I mean, in the ideal world, it wouldn't be partisan, but you know, it is. And people do vote across parties. That happens occasionally in Arlington, not often, but it does happen. And so, you know, it's something I don't fret about too much because ultimately you have a general election and usually you have choice and you can make a good decision. I enjoy the old days of nonpartisan, but cities and counties who have gone away from nonpartisan, they'll never go back. And so, you know, we are where we are. I'm going to put my email in the chat. So if anybody has a question they want to follow up on, they're welcome to contact me. Again, I have tremendous respect for Arlington. I love Arlington. I miss Arlington. And I have great respect for the Civic Federation. I enjoyed all my time working with the Civic Federation in so many different ways. And I can't think of the Civic Federation without thinking of Jim Pebley and what a model citizen that he was. And the kind of citizen activism that you have and what you're doing, such as this project. It's what makes Arlington a great place. And it's just, you know, it's wonderful to be back with you this evening.
Thank you, Ron. And, you know, we did get one last question, which is was directed to you. And I think if we could wrap, and it's, I think, a really nice question to wrap up tonight's session. So if you would entertain that, the both of you, we'd greatly appreciate it. But this gentleman, Mr. McVor, I hope I pronounced that correctly, shared, "Mr. Carley, I really liked your comment about the committee should identify the problem it's trying to solve. I view that as the pitch for whatever structural recommendations are made. There are lots of national polarization problems that some of these structural reforms might address. But what are sort of local problems we should aim to address? If it's representation by minority groups, I fear that a major minority group in Arlington is Republicans. And if we're making reforms that will give Republicans a board member, then they will be forcibly resisted by Democrats as the current party in power. Is there a problem we could get Democrats to buy into addressing with structural changes?" There's a lot in there, but I think—
That's for sure.
You know, and I think just for the sake of wrapping up, you're welcome to answer as much of it as you can, but as the facilitator, and John, please, if you don't agree, let me know. I would love to know what you think the local problems are that this task force might address. I would love to hear that from both of you. The more detailed part of his question, I'll leave up to you to answer, but I think if you could focus on that, knowing that there is a goal, there should be a goal to everything you're trying to, is there a problem to solve? And if so, what should we be looking at?
Yeah, Tanya, that's a perfect coda to the evening. So, you know, we went through a laundry list of variables. If you think that there are other variables that this group ought to look at, we're going to be running for another, Chris Wimbush, I'm trying to remember now what our latest timeline is for issuing a report. I know it's into calendar year 2022. So what should we be,
No, you are correct.
Okay. So what in addition or in lieu of what we're talking about should we be looking at?
I would say I'm too far removed from Arlington to presume what the current issues are in my old community, but I will say across this country, the most pressing issue right now is really making sure that we create structures and systems where people are heard. I mean, that's sort of core of the Arlington way. It gets, you know, belittled some and people make fun of it. But it's really about making sure all voices are heard and everybody feels included. We talk a lot about inclusion today, and that needs to be a really big tent. And so if Republicans are the minority, Republicans need to be heard. There was a time when there was intentionality of making sure that all of the committees and boards had Republican representation when Democrats were in charge. And when Republicans were in charge, they made sure Democrats got appointed. And likewise, looking at the broad diversity of Arlington and finding ways to give voice to everyone so that they feel like they really do belong in the community. You know, I shorten the vision statement to this, that Arlington will be a diverse and inclusive world-class urban community in which each person is important. And it's making that reality that each person is important has always been the challenge. And if we can stick to that vision and look at where are we, whose voices are not being heard, look at the data, analyze it, and then think seriously, how do we ensure that each person is important because they are heard and they feel like they belong?
Yeah, I really like that, Ron. I think that's a great way to end. And I would just say this, that, you know, it is hard sometimes as a citizen to remember that you can be heard and then the board can vote the other way. That doesn't mean you weren't heard. And that's hard, I think, is that people sometimes confuse process with results. So to the extent that you can be open and welcoming and listen to people, I think that's always, always a good thing.
Thank you both. So much. Are there any final comments you'd like to share with our group tonight? And again, John and I and the whole committee and as well as the public can't thank you enough for the time that you've taken with us and for sharing your expertise and your knowledge and your experience. It really is so valuable as we're exploring these items and looking at what recommendations may be made. John, is
I'll let Ron have the last word because he's the Arlington guy. And I will just say this from a national perspective, you should in Arlington be enormously proud of your school board, which really shaped national policy on a hugely difficult issue. And so Arlington has a lot of history, but you have a lot to live up to.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, I would just conclude, I guess, Ron, I didn't mean to cut you off. I would just conclude by saying, you know, we want this conversation to continue. This is only the third in a series of 8 public fora where we're going to be doing similar programs over the course of several more months. So reach out to the Civic Federation, reach out to the Tiger Group, go to the CivFed website, go to the Tiger page on the CivFed website, and reach out to individual Tiger members, many of whom are on the call with us tonight. So thank you all again.
And Ron, would you like to close this out, and then we'll turn it over to our wonderful chair of the Tiger community?
Well, I couldn't agree with Chris more about the reputation that Arlington has. And at the same time, I will say the enemy of the good is complacency. And so really looking not just to the past, but to the future is really important to sustain the performance that Arlington has enjoyed.
Thank you. So Chris?
On that, I want to say once again, echoing John and Tanya, thank you all so much for joining us this evening, for sharing your wisdom, for our fantastic questions from our audience tonight. I know that we've had some Tiger members drop in the chat, but I've just dropped the link to our dedicated page on the CivFed website. I encourage you all to join us for our next 2 forums. The one that's coming up soonest is on June 14th. That will focus on ranked choice voting and electoral systems. And then we have another forum coming up that will focus also on proportional representation on the 26th. So I encourage you all to continue to join us, to engage, to visit our website, and otherwise have a fantastic evening. And thank you so much.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody.
Great to see everyone.